Good morning. This is Real Estate Matters with Michael Guthrie. Hopefully you all are doing well. We appreciate you joining us this Saturday morning. Lots and lots going on here in Charlottesville this weekend. You've got the ACC wrestling tournament. You got baseball. You got lacrosse. There are all sorts of different things going on. And so we really appreciate you taking a little bit of time to be with us. I'm very, very excited to welcome our guest today on Real Estate Matters. And our guest, I believe, personifies what this show is all about. As you know, our mission here is to show that Real Estate Matters is all about the economy and what's going on in all aspects of the real estate market. And our guest, David Stevens, is the Commissioner of the Federal Housing Administration. And his position allows us to see firsthand what's happening on the housing side and the mortgage side of our business. And obviously, there's a lot going on in that regard right now. David is also a personal friend, and it's great to have you on the show, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here, Michael.
Dave, I'll just jump right into this. I've got, interestingly enough, I had some folks post some things on my Facebook page, Real Estate Matters, but obviously what's going on right now with mortgage reform and the white paper that was released a couple weeks ago, which I know you had your hand in regards to how to best make this mortgage aspect of our business positive in the future. What's the best thing to do? And I know there are a lot of different aspects to that, but I saw something just today, or maybe it was last night, just about mortgages and with what the reform is looking like, that maybe 30-year money is going to go away and it'll be more of an adjustable rate type of mortgage. Why don't you just kind of give us an overview of what's happening with that, and the biggest thing, let people know that it's not going to happen tomorrow. This is a long-term vision as to what's best for the country and what's best for the housing market.
Yeah, I think I appreciate you asking the question. I think the greatest concern I have about the white paper is what everybody's assuming it says that it actually never says. And just to be clear, under the Dodd-Frank bill, we were obligated to present to Congress early in the year a paper on the future of the housing finance system. And by we, that means the Obama administration. The paper is authored by HUD and Treasury. I'm assistant secretary at HUD. And it focuses on a couple of key points. First is it clearly states that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have to be wound down. And while I know people may be concerned with statements that are as bold as that, let's keep in mind that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have cost the American taxpayer over $150 billion and that a system operating that worked to produce shareholder returns, profits that were privatized, in other words, but socialized losses, meaning that the $150 billion in losses we all share, is a system that really created a lot of bad behavior. And there's a lot of really great employees at both of those agencies, private companies. But in the end, as you look at their performance, they were integral in the ultimate collapse of the housing finance system, and so they need to be wound down. It also clearly talks about how we need to find a market that private capital will reinvest in. And, Michael, you know I've been in the business a long time. I go back three decades in this housing industry, and when I first started, private institutions were very active in the mortgage finance system. Today, 95% of all loans are underwritten by a government entity, whether it's FHA, VA, or Freddie or Fannie, or USDA or others. But these are all government agencies that are basically underwriting the entire U.S. mortgage market on the potentially at the risk of the shareholder. And so as we think towards the future, it's finding a system that brings back private capital. And the only third thing I would just want to highlight at a high level is there's a clear focus in the future of this paper to make sure we have explicit financing available for underserved families so that people who are not of means will have ability to gain the homeownership dream through access and affordability measures that will be implemented by future administrations, as well as ensuring that we think about transition. We're still in a very fragile housing market, and to the point you made leading into the question, all of this needs to take time. Our primary focus needs to make sure the economy continues to recover. Homeownership is a very critical part of this nation's economic strength, and so we are very focused on making certain that as we think about the long-term solutions, we maintain a vigorous focus on the short term to ensure that there's available financing for every qualified family in America or person in America to be able to buy the home of their dreams.
Dave, let me ask you a question, because you know, the analogy I've used over these last few weeks, and I've said to people, look, this is a long-term focus. It took us a long time to get to this place. It's going to take us a probably longer time to get out. But you all looking at the future, I think, is very encouraging. But the analogy that I use is, you know, the old Jack in the Box deal, where you got that crazy little guy and you're pressing him down into that can, and if you don't get that lid shut and latched, that guy jumps back out. And what you all, what the government's done, and a lot of it because we're trying to engage this housing market, get people up and running, is we've subsidized those interest rates to keep them down. But when the government takes their hand off of that ever so slightly, we got to expect that interest rates are going to be impacted and in that situation go up. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, look, it's, you know, we live in a very challenging world right now, and I'm sure every listener in some way, shape, or form at some point in time has complained about the government's excessive role in whatever the policy may be. And here we have an environment where the government's role in housing is almost 100%. You can't get any financing today without the government backing the risk and artificially pushing to keep rates low. And these ultimately cost the taxpayer. You know, the fact for the after the collapse of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the Wall Street firms a couple of years ago, under the previous administration and really leading into this administration, we committed to spend $1.2 trillion to buy mortgage-backed securities out of the market because there were no buyers for American mortgages anywhere in the world, and that kept rates low enough so people could go buy homes. We implemented a first-time homebuyer tax credit and extended it at the cost, again, of billions of dollars of uncollected taxes in order to keep homeownership in the market. This artificial presence of the United States government, at some point, you have to find a way to get private capital to reengage, because, quite frankly, the taxpayer can't fit the bill. Interest rates need to ebb and flow over time. Michael, you and I both remember when we thought 8% was a great rate.
Oh, my gosh. I remember 12% being a great rate.
Yeah, well, that was in the 80s. But, yeah. You know, these 4.5% to 5.5% rates, they work in they're rational for the price of money when there's low inflation, particularly in a recession. But as an economy recovers and as economies begin to inflate, there's going to be a natural pressure, you know, economically speaking, on the price of the dollar, and that's going to raise interest rates. The goal here over the long term, if you have good economic policy, is while you have cycles, you don't have extremes. And we're coming out of an extreme of low rates. We want to avoid an extreme of high rates. And unless we want the government to spend taxpayer dollars at the levels we've been talking about to keep rates low forever, which is unsustainable, we really need to find a way for the private market to reengage.
Well, I think it's important. I'm speaking with David Stevens, who is the Assistant Secretary of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, Commissioner of the FHA. And I think it's important for people to understand that one of the reasons I really am so appreciative of you being in this role at this point, at this critical time, is you have worked in all aspects of the market. You've worked on the mortgage side. You've worked on the real estate side as the COO of Long & Foster. You've been involved with Freddie and Fannie at times in your career. And, you know, given that fact, you obviously are seeing all aspects of that and want very much for the housing market to improve and recover, but do it in a natural way and not a way that's just totally, time and time again, artificially stimulated.
Absolutely. I mean, Michael, you know this, and I'm sure you, as one of the top leaders in real estate in the nation, and clearly in Virginia, I'm sure you emphasize this every chance you can. But I've gone through a lot of trends in this economic cycles we've been through. This is clearly one of the most stressful we'll ever go through in our lives. But you know, the homeownership affordability index has never been better to buy. Rates are near record lows, and in my view, aside from whatever short-term bumps we may see in the road, the vast majority of the downward pressure on home prices has already resolved itself. And really, we're in this peak affordability cycle, which, you know, ultimately, if rates rise, potential home buyers will miss out on that opportunity, and home prices will rise again. And so the question, you know, a lot of people ask themselves is home ownership a good market for the long term? I'm a firm believer in home ownership for those who can qualify. I think we are at a very unique time where opportunities may be at their at or near a peak opportunity for buyers to step in. And you know, I look at demographics. We have the population growth right now. The next cycle of home buyers is going to be coming through what's called the echo boom generation. And it's a generation that's several million people larger than the baby boom generation was, which created the last cycle of home ownership. And we're going to have many forecasts that we may have a shortage of housing, available housing in the market in years to come. But what we need to do is just think about, as we're going through this now, I think families need to ask themselves, do I want to own a home? Can I afford to own a home? And if that's the case, home ownership is a great long-term value proposition, not just economically, but for community stability. It creates better health outcomes, it creates lower crime, and better education. There are plenty of studies to support all of this. And while we need to be worried about, you know, the current environment, we're clearly in a fragile market. The economy's been on, you know, we're out of recession. The economy is clearly on a path for growth. The unemployment data released just this week showed the 12th straight month of employment growth, and this is the biggest increase in many, many years, and in percentage terms. And you know, again, a great we have you know, a lot of great concerns about what may happen as the economy evolves, but broadly speaking, I think if we have sound principles around what we how we participate as an administration and Congress to intervene when necessary, but know when to back away so that private capital can reengage, you can do that with an eye on all of these factors that I just mentioned, and recognize that, you know, this is a robust housing market in this country. It will recover, and I think we're doing so with the steps we're taking prudently to try to slowly look for ways to back out of the government's role in participating, bring the private capital back in, but keep the market stable.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to change gears with us for the second half of the show. I want you to kind of give us an overview of what's going on with FHA. I'd like to get your idea of this whole, what they're calling graduated mortgage payment, I think is what it's called. But we're going to take a break and let our newest sponsor, New American Mortgage, and our existing sponsor, Classic Furniture, let you know why they'd like your business, and we'll return after they get a chance to do that. Welcome back to Real Estate Matters. This is Michael Guthrie, and you are listening to News Radio 1070. I have David Stevens on the line with me, the FHA commissioner. Dave, I really do appreciate you being on the show. And the things that I've been talking about over the last couple months, as I've read and I've listened and I've attended different things, is that 2011 really is the beginning of a recovery. And that as we move through 2011 and into 2012, just as you said before the break, there's certainly things that are showing that things are going to pick up. Is that kind of what you're seeing as well?
Yes, Michael. You know, I think if you, all anybody has to do is look at what's happening with the unemployment figures released this week, what the stock markets have done generally, what's happening sort of internationally from an economic standpoint. You know, barring some of these disruptions, for example, in the oil producing nations that are out of our control, we've clearly been on a path for recovery now for several months. And as I said before the break, I'm a big believer in cycles and in demographics, and I feel very confident that the market is going to be moving forward. And you know, Warren Buffett said it himself in an interview just a few days ago. So we're seeing those signs. It doesn't, you know, I think everybody needs a healthy dose of skepticism because I think that makes you make better decisions. But without question, all indicators point to that we're on a slow but steady recovery out of this the recession that we just exited.
I want to talk to you just about where things are going with FHA, but one of our fans on facebook.com/realestatematters, Todd Hawkins, wanted me to ask you about the FHA 203K program, and in particular, we've heard that there are some thoughts about involving investors in that program. Can you kind of give us an update on that?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of questions about whether FHA could get into the investor side of the business. Actually, the unfortunate reality is FHA used to do investor loans many years ago, and through congressional actions several years ago, we are now precluded from doing investor transactions. So we've been having some recent discussions internally about whether it would make sense to try to reemerge into that marketplace and be able to do non-owner occupied properties. And unfortunately, one of the variables we'd have to entertain is it would require legislation. So perhaps more to come there. We're considering it as we look at the programs today.
Yeah, and as folks, for some of you that may not know, the FHA 203K program is a program that I feel like is a hidden gem, and that is somebody who wants to buy a house and put some sweat equity and buy something that's not in as great a shape. They can do that work and then get it appraised for the higher number and build it into the mortgage. And obviously that would be a wonderful thing in regards to investors. I know in some places, Dave, up in the Northern Virginia area, inventory is at a low. We're still hovering around 3,000 homes on the market, which is about 18, 19 month worth of inventory. So anyway, we can come up with ways to engage people into buying investment properties and fixing them up and selling them. We're all for that, and the FHA 203K program would certainly fit the bill, but certainly understand from a legislative standpoint that may be a pretty steep cliff.
Yeah, well, it's great input, and it is certainly something we're considering. So that was a well thoughtful suggestion brought up by a fan on the Facebook.
There you go. Hey, question for you, just in regards to FHA itself. When you were on the show a few months ago, was right when you were kind of doing the FHA reform and raising down payments and those kind of things. How's that going, and how are you feeling about the long-term viability of FHA?
Well, look, and I'm great at giving long answers to short questions, Michael, but this is one that's important because we just raised premiums again, and I know it was of concern to many in the real estate community, and it obviously affects potential home buyers. When I walked into FHA, we were on the verge of draining our capital reserves into the negative column, and under by law we are required to maintain a capital reserve level. I won't bother you with the numbers, but we have to maintain a capital reserve level by law, and it had fallen below that. I testified that I anticipated it to do so before coming into the job, and it certainly did everything I expected. There were just several years of just bad loans on the balance sheet, and we're paying the price for it. So the only way to actually improve the quality of the portfolio and raise capital is through policy changes, which we've made several, and to raise premiums. And so we raised the premium. We've raised premiums now three times since I've been in this position, because in the last actuarial reserve, last actuarial study, which we released to Congress in November, just a few months ago, the actuarial firm said that while they expect us to keep growing capital, there was still a 40% risk that the fund could go negative if home prices declined any further. And my obligation, my fiduciary obligation to ensure that there's no subsidy required from the taxpayer and that we operate on our own funds and actually produce revenue back to the taxpayer was to raise the premium one more time, and we just announced that. It goes into effect April 18th. So to that extent, we made the right move. We are in a significantly better position, and quite frankly, I think one of the great stories that we may look back on at the end of this whole cycle is that FHA may have been the only major, in essence, financier of mortgages in this country that never needed any subsidy, bailout, or any other help, and went through this entire cycle entirely on their own, supporting themselves with their own fee structure.
Well, and the thing that's really amazing about that is that, if I'm not mistaken, and unless it's changed, FHA does more purchaser volume than Freddie and Fannie combined. Isn't that correct?
Well, I'm not one to talk about market share. I have read many reports that do reflect that in 2010, FHA's purchase volume exceeded Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac combined. And, you know, what's really most important is 80% of our purchase transactions last year were for first-time home buyers. You know, you can buy you can get a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage with a 3.5% down payment through FHA, and it's remarkable when you consider that through most everybody else, you need a much larger down payment. We do this safely and soundly in a very traditional way, but the ability to continue to provide access to first-time home buyers and underserved borrowers. is done with a very low down payment, which is the critical variable. The only way we'll be able to continue to do that is to keep FHA strong, because if we don't meet our capital reserve requirements, then it's highly likely that Congress and external parties would intervene and perhaps require bigger down payments or changes that could be really harmful to the future of home ownership. So, yeah, it is unique, and it does play clearly a very unique role in the purchase market.
We've only got a couple minutes left. I'm interested to get your take very quickly on as these mortgage reforms happen, what do you see happening in regards to the 30-year fixed mortgage versus more and more going to an adjustable rate mortgage?
Well, look, so first of all, if you read the white paper that was submitted, the paper we talked about in the beginning of this interview, there were three options presented. All three had maintained an FHA and a VA. Those programs offer 30-year fixed rate mortgages. In two of the three options, it included a new form of government guaranteed mortgages that could clearly provide a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. Quite frankly, my view is that this document will be a catalyst. It's clearly a discussion document. Any future system will require legislation going forward. And I think, you know, the active involvement of people who are concerned, calling their members of Congress and telling them what's important about housing finance, and if it's the 30-year fixed-rate loan, making that very clear, I think will help the future system that we create be safe and sound. And Michael, I know you're one of the leaders in real estate, and others like yourselves are very active making your voices heard in Washington, as is the National Association of Realtors. And I think that's absolutely the best way to move forward. The only last point I would make is, look, I started in the business when rates were, 21%. I worked for a bank,
both.
And we offered 30-year fixed-rate loans on our own balance sheet. So I think that the fear of, all these things that could be taken away, I think we just have to be thoughtful. We have to be vocal and very aggressive about what's important to us as stakeholders. But I walk away. I'm going to walk away from this, economic environment that we're going through right now, very optimistic about the housing market for the future, and I think we'll have good, safe, and sound mortgage products for borrowers to take advantage of.
David, as always, I really appreciate your time. It's a privilege to have you on. We could talk for a long, long time, and unfortunately, this is only a half an hour show. I'm sure at some point we'll get it a little bit longer, maybe even have call-ins, but appreciate your time. Hope you and your family have a great weekend, and thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it being here.
Folks, our time is up. And as always, I thank you for yours. Have a great weekend.